A gloomy Monday in Jacksonville. That's the feeling inside Everbank Field as well after the Jags fell to the Houston Texans 31-20. Welcome to Jaguars.com Live presented by Everbank. JP Shadrick, Brian Sexton, John Osier will take you up to 1 o'clock when Gus Bradley will address the media as he does each and every Monday. But this time it's after another really tough loss for this Jaguars team, guys. 31-20. Fred Taylor probably said it best in the opening segment of the postgame show last night on radio. Just bad ball. Losing that lead the start of the fourth quarter, 14-10, the 21 points in a four-minute window there, and then all of a sudden the game was lost.
Yeah, and again, it seemed to happen so fast. I'm writing in my computer, 14-10, and you're starting to sort of, you know, write the comeback and that things are going better and that they compete. And then all of a sudden you look up and it's literally in 4 minutes, it's that same feeling. And it's that same coming back. And, Brian, I think we talked about before the game on Jaguars.com Live. I thought this was one that, for the first time this season, they should win. Going on the road in Tampa and in Indianapolis, I get that those were could have won and they had their chances. And before the game, you thought, yeah, this is. But playing at home against a 1-4 team, I thought yesterday was the first time that I came away thinking, boy, they really should have won that game, and that's disappointing.
I couldn't help as we went through it, and obviously I'm on the sidelines. So I'm watching J.J. Watt, who's just sucking wind. He's not 100% because he's not healthy. And I'm expecting the Jaguars to be able to run the ball, right? And they couldn't. And I'm expecting them to get something started because we had seen them move the ball against Tampa. And I get that Tampa's not as talented. They don't have Brian Cushing in the middle of the defense. And he finishes up a lot, by the way. And they just couldn't. I mean, the last couple of weeks I have felt like stop, start, fit, start. Here we go. Come on. And they just have not been able to get – even though they scored 31 points last week, I mean, it still was a point where you're thinking, three and out here, really?
Right.
You know, I mean, after they went up 17-14, I turned to the guy I was standing with and said, you can't go three and out here. Now's the time for this offense. Call the right plays, execute the blocks, whatever it is. Get it started. And they just couldn't get it started.
And it really happened twice. There was the point you're talking about where it's 17-14 and they didn't respond. And then defensively, when it was 14-10, didn't respond.
You know, I'm going
to sort of back to back. And that's what we've been talking about pretty much all season with this team. The moments that they need to come through and be big, it went away.
Let me thread it together for you, okay? Because those plays stand out to me. So in the first half on that 99-yard drive, the Jaguars get a sack, and they've got the Texans at 2nd and 13 at the 17-yard line. Screen pass, I mean, you know what's coming, right? I mean, to me, I know DeAndre Hopkins has the numbers and is the story today, but to me it was Arian Foster that beat this team. Because when they needed to move the chains, and they did, 7-14 on third down, they went to him. And they did on that play. And that was the crucial play that kept that drive moving.
Sure.
Because it was 1st and 20, and that was after the Josh Evans mistake, right?
Right.
It gave them good field position. So here's a chance, can't get it done. Then as you just pointed out, you've got the ball, you've got the lead, or pardon me, you've got the lead, you've pounded away. They've got 2nd and 13 again, this time on their 30. Same play.
Right.
The exact same play. Arian Foster, they go down square, they go up 17-14. Then the Jaguars get the ball back, and they face 2nd and 13 at their own 17-yard line, and they go 3-0.
Right. I didn't mind. The 99-yard drive was disturbing, but I didn't mind that so much. It came a couple of 1st and 20s, and that was bad. But they got it back, and they fought through. Even not playing very well offensively, they had gotten it back, even with the turnover down in the red zone late in the first half, which was, you know, I think Blake Bortles' worst play in a long time.
Because you got to come away with points
but
no matter what.
They overcame all that, and they had it back, and going into the fourth quarter, they were leading. And then the deluge the other way. And I didn't expect that yesterday. I really didn't.
Let's focus on these turnovers. You mentioned the one at the goal line right before halftime. Of course, it was the pick six later as well that put the game really out of reach by 3 scores. Three touchdown day, 3 interception day for Blake. And like you said, you got to get some kind of points before halftime on that drive.
Yeah. I mean, I remember standing there thinking, all right, just, you know, I don't necessarily believe in safety, but here you are with a chance to tie the game. And, and you put the ball in the middle of the field, but you're trying to thread the needle between two defenders. Hey, you got a quarterback in his 19th start, feeling aggressive. They move the ball, right? 2-minute drill. Here we go. And you can't do that. Quarterback now learns. He knows, I got to get points there because it felt like Carolina,
yep.
right? It felt like, oh, man, he had a drive, and you come away 10-9 in Carolina, you come away 10-7 here.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you come out, and you don't do anything on the first drive of the third quarter. I'll forget the last turnover because I think the game was out of hand at that point. But the pick six, I can remember walking back up the field and thinking, I was going to the other end zone, and I'm looking on the big screen, thinking here, just a good, solid drive here. If you just settle for a field goal, that's fine. Just move the ball, get some points in this drive.
And that would have gotten them back to what, within a touchdown?
Within
right?
a touchdown,
okay,
right. Just, you know, and then, of course, they throw it. It goes off Julius's hands and into the defender, and that's it.
Yeah, that smelled to me more like miscommunication from two guys who haven't played enough together. And it doesn't excuse it,
no.
but I don't necessarily think that was a case where Blake just, I don't say drawn a blank, but down in the red zone in the first half, that's just a play you can't make. The pick six in the second half is a play that you at least understand, okay, this guy thought he was going one way, the quarterback thought he was going another way. It happened.
Here's the thing about most of the pick six that we've seen from Blake Bortles. They've come at the least opportune time. You know, there's a thought if you throw one when you're up, I don't know, you're up 24-7,
right.
or it's the first quarter. That's one thing. But going back to the Steelers game here mm-hmm. last year, going to the Carolina game here this year, and then yesterday, the game is still in the balance, and there's a key moment, and it's the pick six. And I'm
still waiting to see one of those good ones.
Well, you know, I don't think they're good. They're all good, but they're not as always catastrophic.
No, I know what you're saying.
As when the moment is there. And you can remember the Dolphins game. Unfortunately, we've got enough of those to know. And you talk about stopping and starting and stopping and starting. When he gets over that, mm-hmm. right, and doesn't throw that, then we know he's taking that next
step. The other point with the pick sixes, JP, is that one reason they have resonated as so damaging is they haven't responded after they happen. So it's sort of a chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
They're very damaging, and the team also – yesterday was probably over before they could. They haven't responded to that situation and haven't responded well to adversity.
Let's go to the other side of the ball. We're going to Gus Bradley at 1 o'clock, the press conference here on Jaguars.com Live. He speaks each and every Monday after the game. Defensively, third downs – couldn't get off the field a lot of times yesterday. I think they had 3 third down touchdowns in the game. The Texans did. It's been an issue and certainly was again yesterday. Got to get off the field on third down somehow. No
can't
pass rush. Yeah, no pass rush.
I mean, I could talk for 5 minutes about that topic. Yeah. When you can't rush the passer with 4, it's hard to get off the field on third down.
Yeah.
And that's where they are. And Brian, you're more eloquent than I.
yes, you're right, John. Yeah. Is that eloquent enough?
Yeah, I mean
that's
I'm
it.
Not trying to be facetious about
no, it's
it.
True.
But it's been a year-long problem. It's hard to imagine right now, after seeing this team for 6 games, that all of a sudden somebody is going to develop into a dominant Leo pass rusher. That doesn't exist on this team right now unless they're hiding it. So then the question becomes, how much do you blitz? How much do you get away from what you feel like you are? And this team was not built as a blitz-oriented, mm-hmm. fool you with the pass rush team. At the same time, this approach defensively hasn't worked.
I watched Toyer in the pocket yesterday, and on third down, he was as comfortable as could be. Not because there wasn't a lot of pressure, but because he knew there wasn't going to be. So he was patient and able to let routes develop.
Mm-hmm.
And when he didn't, he just dumped it off to Arian Foster. Yep.
And as much as we talk about DeAndre Hopkins, and a very good player, by the way, DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, Devon House, I didn't think did a bad job until the last couple of touchdowns, which, you know, I get that those count and they're damaging. But you got the impression that a lot of what Devon House gave up would have never been an issue had the pass rush been better.
I'll tell you this.
Wouldn't have been a great day. It would have been a good day for
sure,
DeAndre
right,
Hopkins.
Yeah.
I looked at the stat sheet, and it didn't feel like DeAndre Hopkins had 10 catches and 148 yards.
Right.
Because he was held in check there until the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made some catches and extended drives and things like that. But I thought Devon House, one-on-one, did a pretty good job against, you know, one of the best young receivers in the game. He
probably as
is.
Well as you could do without – yeah, and defensive backs and, to me, always depend on the pass rush. Maybe not always. Maybe there are a couple of guys. But once you give them 4 or 5 seconds to run around, there's not – I'm not sure Deion Sanders –
the rules are
or
yeah.
Richard Sherman, whoever these cover guys are, would have covered DeAndre Hopkins that much better after the kind of time that Brian Hoyer had.
Yeah, the rules are set up to favor receivers and quarterbacks anyway, and now
right.
if you don't help them with a pass rush, they're at a complete disadvantage. And having said that, I thought that Devon House, and I still do, all season long I have watched him battle,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't seen that kind of battle from a Jaguars cornerback in a while, a guy who could step up and take on the top guy and do his best to shut him down. And for some degree, do it. But, of course, he broke free with those two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and today everybody's talking about how great he is, and he is good.
Right. Well, great receivers eventually make even good cornerbacks pay.
You bet.
At the other time. The other thing that's glaring, and I know these are the topics today, playmaking safety and pass rusher who can get home off the edge, two just glaring things this team doesn't have right now.
Yeah. You know, I really wanted to come in here today.
Duh, right?
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, I mean, oh, you're right. That's true.
I really wanted to come in here today and talk about the play that Roy Miller made, the momentum,
game-changing
play at the end of the
on
third
fourth
quarter.
Down.
Look,
yes.
It's fourth down and a ham sandwich, right? And we had already seen Brian Hoyer go right into the gap and get it. I thought, foregone conclusion, that's what they're going to do again because the defense was set up that way. And here comes Roy Miller and forces the handoff quickly and hits Foster in the backfield, forces him to duck back, and here comes Paul Posluszny. What a tremendous play. But Julius Thomas' touchdown came just after that, as people will recall. And that was the kind of play that we have been waiting to see from this defense. You're not going to see the sack strip, or at least you're not going to see it very often, because as you said, there's not a dominant Leo. But, man, Roy Miller was disgusted in Tampa and told me he was going to make plays.
Yeah.
And he did. And unfortunately, on the next drive, they didn't.
Well, and when the team, not a lot of margin for error because there's not a lot of playmakers who go by the X's and O's.
A lot of noise outside of the building this week. The Jags are heading to London. We'll see how Gus handles it starting right now on Jaguars.com.
All right, Monday injury update. We'll start off with Allen Robinson. Allen sustained a lower leg contusion on a collision in the fourth quarter. He was sent inside for x-rays, which were negative. He'll be reevaluated on Wednesday. For TJ Yeldon, he continues to improve from his groin strain. Did some work on Saturday and was evaluated on Sunday pregame, but was not quite ready to play. So we'll see how he progresses throughout the week. For Corey Grant, he has a hip flexor strain. He will not practice on Wednesday. For Tony Washington, he also has a hip flexor strain on that same play in the first quarter. He will also not practice on Wednesday. Brian Walter sustained a back injury in yesterday's game. X-rays were negative, and he is undergoing further testing this afternoon. For Bernard Pierce, he continues to be in the NFL's concussion protocol, so we will update you when he's cleared from that. With Marquise continuing to improve with the hamstring injury, so we'll update you if anything changes. For tight end, Julius Thomas had a full workload yesterday, and although the hand is doing well, he does have a rib contusion from falling on the ball on a tackle. His status will be updated throughout the week. With Chris Clemens, he was having lower back spasms during yesterday's game. Missed some time, but did return to action. He'll have his normal rest day on Wednesday. James Sample continues to improve from his shoulder injury. Updates later in the week for James. With Scuda, he had a stinger during the game. Came out, was evaluated by the medical staff, but when he was cleared, he went back into the game. Had some soreness today, but should be okay for Sunday. And then lastly, with Sendarek Marks. Sendarek played limited reps as planned in Sunday's game, and he did very well medically, so he'll see an increased workload moving forward.
Will you bring everybody on the trip? You won't rule any guys out on Thursday?
Not sure.
I'll let you know. Thank you.
Hey, what's up? Okay, very challenging time that we're going through right now. I think a lot of things are taking place as far as, going through offense, defense, special teams. I think we're at a stage, I told the team today that, You know, four out of five of the games we played have been one possession games, as you look at it. And I think there's another one where we were in the fourth quarter up 14-10. We're in that stage where we've got to find a way to pull these off. And I think, you know, I believe in the guys in the locker room. I think that's important, that they believe in each other, and they do. And I think that we're going to use that to help us. But we've got to strain even more. We've got to ask, they got to ask even more of themselves as we do as coaches, ask more of each other, and then that accountability factor. But, you know, going through this, you knew this was going to be challenging. To teach this team what it takes to get through this and do enough right things to earn that victory. So that's where we're at. I'll open up for questions.
Sound like you're in 2013 there for a second, teaching these guys how to win and challenge. Are you surprised that it's still not catching on?
Well, I think the difference is that, you know, when you're up for, I think it was 14-10 with 11 minutes to go, and but they scored a touchdown, and we didn't play tight enough coverage as we needed to. We come back offensively, we get the ball, and we, 17-yard gain, 18-yard gain, could have been first and 10 on the 44. Instead, it's a holding call, brings us back to the 16-yard line, and we don't convert on a third down. We punt it, they get 16 yards off a return, puts them in good field position, and then they catch on a third and three, a 27-yard touchdown pass. And then we throw a pick. So in 3 minutes and 30 seconds, they scored 21 points. All in that frame in the fourth quarter. That's the part where, you know, I think we've got to teach our team that when you've got the lead, you know, now you even go more, you know, and if there is such a thing, I should say. But I think that you, instead of dipping your toe in the water, you get immersed in it. And that's what we need to learn.
Did you feel like guys were still pressing?
You know what? I think there was, I could state some occasions where I felt that, you know, three or four, but overall I didn't see too much of that. I just didn't feel like we made the plays, you know, when some guys, when their number was called.
You said, yesterday you have to evaluate and differentiate between solid performance and fluff.
Right. And I think the solid performance is, I want to make sure that what we see in practice is what we get in the game. I think that that same competitive spirit transfers over. What we're seeing now in some guys is they compete 90% of the time. And I'm talking about just a few. 90% of the time, and then they have a let up or they lose their focus for a period of time, and that comes back to hit you. And you can't do that. You can't do that in the NFL. In the secondary, if a guy gets behind you, there's no excuse. If you lose your eyes, there's no excuse. You know, you've got to be able to do those things. That's what's part of being in the league, and it's playing that complete game.
So it's not a lack of effort. It's a lack of focus.
Focus. I would say focus, complete focus from start to finish.
Is that something that you can fix, or is that just at what point do you go, well, that's just who that guy is?
Well, it is a challenge. I think that you look at it, and as a coach, you say, hey, we've got to help him through that. We've got to get him to understand. But I think the player must take responsibility. It's kind of everybody's involved in that.
You have gotten to the sixth game of the year, and you can't force turnovers, and you can't get off the field on third down. How do you – is there a fix?
Well, I said this before. It's a great question. That's the one we've been dealing with. We're trying to figure out D-line-wise where we're at, what can we count on, four-man pressure versus pressure. We pressured 15 times yesterday. Some worked out very well. We got a sack. We affected the quarterback. We did some good things. One of our pressures gave up 28 yards total off two pressures. So that one wasn't as effective. I think when you pressure, you're going to make some plays and you're going to give up some. It just happens to be like that. What we've got to look at, does the what we gain outweigh what we could give up? And right now we've got one interception in six games. And to bring pressure with the idea of affecting the quarterback to get more turnovers, I think that's, you know, the stage we're at right now.
Without a lot of coaching and personnel changes, how are you dictating accountability? Like, how are you making sure that your team and your players are being held?
Well, that's in our team meeting room, you know, and what takes place in there and what happens in every meeting room. So, you know, I would say they sense it. They understand it. They understand the responsibility, and I'll just leave it at that.
You were talking about pressure. You're talking about bringing more.
Yeah, five or more.
When you're –
talking about what you said at the start of the press conference here. I remember a couple weeks ago after a game-winning drive, Kirk Cousins said, I couldn't have done that 3 years ago as a rookie. Is it just a fact of life in the NFL that when you don't have reliable veteran playmakers, you're going to take your lumps in this league?
Well, yeah, some of our rookies are first-year, second-year players are playing well, and some of our veterans aren't playing as well as they need to, and vice versa. So, you know, I think it's the consistency. In this game, if you have 11 guys out there and one guy doesn't do his job, it shows up. It does. It shows up. You see that on tapes. And if someone's doing it here and we get a holding call to force it to a third and long, that shows up. When you don't play tight coverage and 10 other guys are doing their job, it shows up. And that's the part where I want to see, you know, where our guys take responsibility for it. But if this is a repeated action, then what is accountability? If they repeat it and they continue to play and go out there and play, what takes place? And that's the decisions we got to make this week.
On offense, you guys still haven't had Yeldon, Julius, A-Rob, and Hearns all at the same time for the same game. But are you seeing where if you ever get to that, the offense could be capable of winning you shootouts?
Yeah, I think, offensively, we're doing some good things. I think we're moving the ball. Our run game is not where we need it. I think that I mentioned strain to the team. I think that you see initial strain, but I think the challenge for us is to see strain through the echo of the whistle. That part isn't what I'm seeing, and that's the challenging part. That's what our team needs to be challenged on now, and I think that's all three phases. So, and the finish part, it comes up. You know, we're, 10-7 going into halftime? We have that just like we had hoped. We love to have the last possession of the first half and have the first possession of the second half. Last week, we scored, 10 points in those two situations. This week, we didn't score points in either one of them. So, you know, things like that can get you ahead. It could be, 14-10. We scored in the second half. When we did, we scored the first touchdown. Could be 21-10. It's a different outlook, a different way the game is, a different game way the game is played. You know, those opportunities we've got to get.
Does the offense feel different with Julius now that he had a week and was able to play more?
I think it was a little bit, a little different. I think, I think at the end, you know, when we had some injuries and we were forced to be, 12 personnel the whole last, three quarters of the fourth quarter, you know, that was a little straining on those guys. But for the most part, I thought they did a good job. Julius
is going to be some accountability. What is accountability? Shouldn't you benching some guys?
Think that's a great question. What is accountability? To me, accountability is changing someone's behavior. You know, it's not if putting a hammer down changes someone's behavior, then put the hammer down. Ultimately, what we're after is changing behavior, or changing the way if a person's doing the wrong procedure, let's change it. However that needs to be done, I think we'd all agree at that. And so that's why you got to understand your players and know what they're all about. If I told Puzz I was going to fine him $5, he would straighten up. If I told someone else I'm going to fine them $5, they may not. Everybody's different. So you got to find out what they value and what's important to them. And hopefully it's this team, and I'm sure it is. And there's other things personally that you can use. But once you find out what they value, it's easier for accountability to take effect.
When does that take place? 1-5, been 6 weeks. Obviously, what you're doing doesn't seem to be working.
If that requires some guys not playing, if playing time is what they value, then it's playing time.
All the players are still responding to your message. Do you see
any? No, I'm not concerned about that. When I hear them talk about believing in each other, believing in the process, believing in the future and what it brings and what we can do, when I hear them talk like that, I have no concern about that.
What happened on the challenge? What made you guys challenge? What was the thinking behind that with the Hopkins catch?
Oh, they didn't think he had possession up top. You know, and they brought it up to his helmet. He was out of bounds when he brought it up to his helmet.
But even with the penalty, that would have still been a first down. I think it's
5 yards.
Change
of field position.
The play that you didn't challenge, the fumble looked like maybe Hopkins was forced by House on the sidelines. The rules ruled incomplete.
Yeah, up top they said it was a good call.
What are the challenges? Okay, so you're going to bring pressure, which is great, finally. But what are your concerns with that on the back end?
Well, there's a couple things. One, you know, what it can do as far as, we play man coverage and we play zone pressures. So some of our man pressures are effective, some of our zone are pressure. The two that I told you were both zone pressures. 2 times, 28 yards. We ran 3 other zone pressures. We had a sack and 0 yards and 0 yards. So, I mean, there's different obstacles that come up depending on what you're sending, who you're sending. So that's first and foremost. But what it can be is you're hoping that it gets out tight. If they pick up the pressure, you got one less guy in coverage.
But you're not radically going to change your scheme. You're just going to use the pressures that you already guys have been built in. Or are you talking about?
Well, I think continue to investigate even more, trying to find out. I think pressures can do a couple things. One, I think it can stimulate a defense. You can see it bring energy. You can see it. And at times when you're in the beginning of the game, if you don't feel like your defense is playing with a lot of energy, bringing pressure can stimulate them. And, so there's a purpose for it. I think depending on the scheme and matchups, certain types of pressures, you may not like the matchup that it brings. But at times, you go with it. And whether it's a bad matchup, the whole intent is try to affect the quarterback and force him to making bad decisions. And, so I think that's what you're looking at. Well, it doesn't necessarily, pressure doesn't necessarily mean more sacks. It doesn't. Pressure could lead to poor decisions, but it can also lead to big plays. I think you got to look at the team that you're facing, how much they affect them. We surely don't want it to be 7-on-7. I can say that. We don't want that. And ideally, you'd like to have it to where you can pressure with four. And the way we're built, we count on the Leo in first and second down to bring that pressure. You know, if the other guys are more run-stopping type mentality, you'd like to have your three technique be a little bit more disruptive. Sendarek was in there. He brought a little bit more disruptions when he was in there for the few plays he was. But that's how we're built. So we need it from the Leo. If we're not getting it, everything that we need, then we got to look at bringing pressure and taking a guy out of coverage.
That's hard for you, though, isn't it? Because just to get to that point finally, because you're a big believer, like you said, in the four guys.
If you got 67 plays and you're bringing 52 times you're bringing pressure, that's hard. It's hard on a defense. It's really hard.
Josh, you implied last week that you don't pay a whole lot of attention to the outside noise of fans.
Are they saying something?
But you were on the road for a few weeks.
Sure.
Now that you saw it at home with fans leaving the seats in the fourth quarter, does that change how you think about that in any way?
Well, no. I mean, I always, I want to make sure that we play hard and in front of our fans and we give them a good product. I didn't recognize that they left, but now that, I imagine there's probably quite a few of the way if you're bringing left to me, but our whole focus has been on this team. You know, what goes on in that locker room and how we handle it in the team meetings and how we talk, there's not a lot of conversations about, okay, here's what they're saying outside. I mean, we don't talk like that. They'll be happy if we get this right. So we put all of our attention into that.
Critical matchup yesterday, especially the way you schemed it, was the Hopkins House matchup. It seemed like Devon did pretty good for about 40 minutes, had a rough fourth quarter. How would you assess it?
That's it. Five catches for 54 yards, no touchdowns in the first three quarters. Two drives, five catches, 92 yards, two touchdowns. You know, and he's the most targeted wide receiver in the league. He's going to be targeted 20 times. We took some of those targets away, forced him to throw it somewhere else. I thought the first three quarters pretty good, but it's the whole game. Got to play the whole game.
Throughout the run game, would a fullback help, or is it that split there? Is it an extra blocker, or are the tight ends not blocking well
enough? No, I don't. I think it's the strain and finish. I think, probably an analogy would be this, although it shouldn't work this way, is if you have a punt returner and he's just okay, sometimes the punt return team will hold their blocks, but if they've got a guy that's electric back there, they have a tendency to hold their blocks a little bit longer. And with us, with our guys, especially a guy like TJ who can make people miss and things like that, I think we have to have that mentality to strain even more. I think overall it looked like, hey, we're straining at the point of attack up to the second level, but we need more. We need more. And that's the challenging part when we say, hey, we've got to ask more of ourselves and ask more of each other. That's the part we're asking for. You got to have more.
With two red zone picks and another pick six, it seemed like Blake took yesterday's loss maybe as hard as any. Are you worried about his spirit of confidence at all?
No, he's so competitive that that's not a concern. He played, I think, 21 plays, something like that. So I thought he did. It was very good for him and the team, I think, to be out there. And, we'll take a look at it. I think we put him in different spots and how we want to utilize him. So hopefully his reps continue to grow.
Cornell, really decent job. thought that kind of one of the reasons obviously you brought him here?
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. I think when we the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter, we threw 20-some passes, I think. And that's where they had the two sacks. So they're pinning their ears back. They know where we're at. A couple sacks showed up there. But overall, I thought the offensive line, I thought they did a pretty good job with, 53 pass attempts overall for the game. I thought they held up pretty good.
Did you see any tentativeness whatsoever in Denard?
And what was that?
Did you see any tentativeness in
Denard? No. I didn't really analyze him. In the short period of time that we had, I'll watch it again this afternoon and see, but nothing that stood out.
Please go with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and what they're doing through six.
Well, I think the wide receiving core as a whole, we're pretty pleased with them. You know, the production that we're getting out of them. I think they're all doing a real nice job. I love how they're competing, and I think they're getting on the same page. There was one where Julius wasn't on the same page, the interception with Blake, and that can happen when you don't have a lot of time together. With the wide receivers, because of the time that they spent together, I'm seeing more precision.
Do you feel like for Robinson and Hurns being second-year guys, that they're doing a good job handling having to be sort of
that's the part when you look at, and I know there's singular victories that you look at, like Hurns and Robinson and TJ and Blake and Coleman. You have all of these, but you know what? I said that last week. It's, you know, we have to do it as a team, and we see 10 guys doing it, and then there's one that doesn't. And there are multiple times when you saw all 11, multiple times all 11 guys doing it. But we got to have more. When you get to this stage where it's one possession, it really jumps out at you even more.
Ryan Davis's role, did he change at all?
He did. I would say he was solid yesterday. He got more rushes. I don't think it was anything that jumped out at us. But we do need more production out of our Leo spot.
Is it tough when you're a defensive-minded coach when your offense – looks like it's your best bet as far as winning games at this point? Is that tough?
Well, like I said, it's 14-10 in the fourth quarter, and an offense practice too. They're going to have some yards. You hope that the defense puts you in position to where you can win some games. And the offense, the offense did good. I think we feel good about better about the offense because they're moving the ball. But still at the end of the half, it was 7 points. We need more points. So, I think everybody in that room is taking responsibility. We know we can all do more to get this thing right.
Gus, what does it say? You said that House is the most targeted cornerback in the league, and yet the secondary is
Hopkins.
Sorry, my bad. House has still been targeted quite a bit. What does that say about the secondary that has been able to produce turnovers?
Well, that's right. I think it's all 11. It's the rush and cover. If you get good rush, affect the quarterback, you get those opportunities. And, that's what we got to do.
Is Scoot an early down option in Leo, or do you like him as a linebacker?
We do like what he's doing at the auto spot. We do. We've been trying to send him more. I think yesterday we brought him 5 times, or even more than that, 7 times, trying to get him to be an effective pass rusher on first and second down. So I think we're trying to utilize his rush skills at the auto spot.
He was 7 of your 15 rushes?
Yeah, it might have even been more. I respect that question, but no, I'm not concerned. I think he'll continue to grow and continue to improve.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you.